Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is The Price Point. We have a really special guest, one of my all-time favorite players. It's an honor to talk to him. He is a three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove winner, and a two-time Silver Slugger at second base. We have Brett Boone on the line. Brett, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're great, man. We appreciate you doing this. Like I said, this was a fun one. I reached out to you on Instagram, and you were nice enough to write back saying, yeah, I'll do the interview. So, you know, I, of course, appreciate it, and thanks again for getting on here with us.
You got it. You got it.
So we're gonna talk about your childhood and what it was like growing up in your family. Obviously, a baseball family, which we'll touch on. You know, your brother Aaron managing the Yankees, and your dad Bob, which I'm a Phillies fan, so of course I'm not that old, but but I remember you know, rosters from back in the day, and I remember you know, my dad always, he grew up in the 50s, so he was a fan when he was on the Phillies, and I think he played for the Royals, if I remember right.
Yeah, he went Phillies, Angels. He finished up with the Royals.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, and did he play with Quisenberry and those guys?
No, that was after. After that was his. Quisenberry, man. He was probably '80s, early '80s. Was Quisenberry?
Okay, yeah.
Well, I guess that's true. The 1980, because, you know, as a kid, my memory is, I remember the 1980 World Series when the Phillies won it, and they beat Kansas City, and that's when Quisenberry was big. Then he went to the Angels for, I think, '82 to '87. And then he, like I said, he finished up with the Royals his last couple of years.
Okay, I knew he played for the Phillies and Royals.
I remember all those guys.
Yeah. And speaking of that, knowing all those guys, did you get to hang out in the clubhouse when he was, you know, with any of those teams? Did you get to know some of those players?
Sure, yeah. That was, you know, that was my childhood. It was basically, you know, my whole world revolved around going to the ballpark the next day. And, you know, it's like when Dad told me once in a while, now you can't come today. I mean, that was the end of the world for me.
I bet. So if you,
yeah,
if you
pretty,
didn't get,
pretty cool childhood.
That's great. And if you didn't get your homework done or whatever, he wouldn't let you go to the vet or whatever the stadium
Dad,
was back
Dad
then.
Was kind of a, yeah, he was kind of a stickler for that type of stuff.
I bet.
I found a way, whether my homework was done or not, to make sure it was done so I could go.
I bet. So
or give the illusion.
What was hanging out in the clubhouses and just being around your dad, and when you and Aaron were growing up, was baseball something you knew you wanted to be a part of, whether that was a player or something else? Was it baseball or nothing at that point, or did you have any other aspirations?
I think when you're a kid, you know.
Yeah.
When you're 10 years old, of course, you know.
Absolutely.
You want to be a fireman, you want to be a policeman, and I was going to be a baseball player. And that's when the dream starts. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, most of these kids, because I have kids now, and I've coached these travel balls, and I look for those kids that really look long-term, and, hey, I want to be a baseball player, and mean it. You know, I was a 10-year-old kid that there was no doubt in my mind. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, I was going to be in be a big leaguer and play in the big leagues for 15 years. Of course I was going to do that. Just ask me. And that was my childhood, and I didn't know anything else. And, you know, to the point where you're a little naive, but sometimes
Absolutely.
Being naive is a good thing.
Absolutely. And you came from California, if I remember right, because I know you played at USC. Were you born and raised in California, where baseball is something you could do year-round?
No, I grew up in Jersey, actually.
Oh, in Jersey.
And,
okay.
When Dad was in Philly, you know, I was in Jersey, and then when he moved on, got traded to the Angels, he about a year later, I think, he moved us out to Southern Cal. So basically, my early childhood was in Jersey, but then high school and college was Southern California, and then, you know, I was kind of everywhere for 17 years, and when I retired, I came back to Southern California. So I've kind of lived everywhere.
Okay. And I remember your baseball card as a kid, and you know, going to USC, and you played, that team was pretty good. I don't think you guys did you make the College World Series when you were there? I know you had like a long,
we didn't, no, you know, the whole landscape has changed now for college baseball.
Yeah,
you know, back then the Pac-6, we were the Pac-6, and we were the class of the country. Stanford, I think when I was there, might've won back-to-back national championships. Arizona was a big program. Arizona State, and SC. We were kind of coming out of the doldrums from, you know, SC dominated in Dato's time in the 70s and the 60s, but we were kind of rebuilding. My time, we had some good teams, and we got eliminated twice in the final game going to the College World Series. So,
oh my gosh,
we were real good, but never made it there. Never made it there.
You mentioned Stanford. I think was that during Elway's time, because not many people know John Elway. You know, got I think he was actually
Elway's a little older than me.
Okay.
I'd say Johnny's probably 5 years older than me.
Actually. Yeah, I knew he was older. I didn't know if his senior year was your freshman year or something where you caught him at some point in your college career.
Yeah. Yeah, I think McGuire and Randy Johnson, they were at SC when John was at Stanford. So that's,
okay.
You know, I missed him by a few years.
Okay.
You know, my time was Mussina.
Oh, Mike Mussina, yep.
Jack McDowell just signed out of Stanford, and those were those days. So, we didn't get that many big leaguers off my USC team. We had Jeff Cirillo.
I remember in Milwaukee,
really
right?
Career.
Brewers?
And Milwaukee, yeah, he's a good player. And then Damon Buford, I think, got 6 or 7 years in the big leagues. He was on that team. But other than that, we didn't have too many big leaguers. The league had a lot.
Yeah.
Arizona, you know, they put out Trevor Hoffman and JT Snow.
Wow.
And around our, you know, our college league, we had quite a few big leaguers. Eric Karros from UCLA and Jeff Kent from Cal.
Yeah.
And a few from Arizona State. So it was fun. College was a good time, but that was then. Now it's kind of the big conference now is the SEC for college baseball.
It is.
Like I said, the landscape's changed a little bit.
Yeah, they're still good. I mean, I'm from Tennessee. I'm from Nashville originally, and Vandy, of course, I'm a fan of. But, when you think baseball, it is now the SEC. But if you're kind of a traditionalist,
well,
they can offer you
something different.
Yes,
correct. Pac-6 really can't offer you. You know, it's kind of like, you go to Florida State, you're going to be playing in front of 10,000 people on the weekend.
Good point.
You go to USC, and we'd have a big, big weekend against Stanford, and we'd be lucky to get 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, being in LA and being on the West Coast, there's too many other things to do. There's something to be said. You go to an LSU game, and that's you know, the weekend. That whole town is buzzing. Because it's all about that LSU baseball game on the weekend, which I think is a really cool thing. And as a college athlete, I think now being recruited by a team like that can give you that pro atmosphere. That's got to be enticing to a young kid going to college now.
Absolutely. And it helps when those teams, like you said, are good. Watching Mississippi State and LSU and those guys play with the cowbells and the crazy crowd. But we'll be right back with more with Brett Boone in just a second. Planning for your big game party? The new way to buffet is the Infladium, the inflatable snack stadium. Perfect for your tabletop or tailgate. Fill it with snacks and enjoy the game. Easy to set up, easy to clean, and it's reusable. Get the Infladium entire suite of football party products at all Party City locations and online. That's Infladium, Infladium, Infladium. We are back with former big league second baseman Brett Boone. Brett, we were talking, Pac-12 and SEC, and can you go over real quick kind of the differences in recruiting in the two conferences, and then how recruiting has changed over the years? Give us kind of your take on that, and the differences and changes that you see.
Well, I think there's a lot of changes. You know, now the game's completely different. Economically, it's changed from my time. You know, I remember trying to think, my high school season was 87. I graduated high school, and you know, I got drafted in, I think, the 28th round or something by the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
The first pick that year was Griffey, and he was 1-1 in 1987, and he got a signing bonus of about $400,000.
Oh my god.
Nowadays, if you're 1-1, you're getting $8 million. So it's changing your life. I think the big difference now is if you're drafted in the first round of the baseball draft, college is not even an option because there's millions of dollars on the table.
Yeah.
Where in my day, you might get drafted in the middle of the first round, be offered $100,000, but your scholarship was worth more than that.
Hmm.
So you could use that as leverage. So the bottom line is, I think you're not getting the ultimate blue chip guys anymore.
Yeah.
To go to college, you're getting really good players, but all the top draft picks, 100% are signing out of high school because you can't pass up that type of money when you're 18 years old.
Yeah.
To put that away in the bank and start your life off with a pretty good head start. So now, you know, like I said, back in my day, probably half the first round signed, half went to college. Mm-hmm. Maybe half the second round signed, half went to college. And then as you get to the third, fourth, fifth round, a lot of these kids out of high school that were getting drafted in the fourth or fifth round, you know, they had scholarships worth, you know, $150,000, $200,000 and worth more than their signing bonus. Yeah. So college was definitely an option back then.
Yeah.
So I see that's the difference. Recruiting is the whole thing in college baseball now. You know, you can't just go out and recruit the best players because the best players aren't going to go to college. So I think that there's really an art to it, and it's a trick. It's like you almost have to go and start recruiting really good players and hope they're only really good so they go to your college.
That's a good point.
Also it's a difference. You know, I didn't go on my recruiting trips till my senior year, and I didn't get offered scholarships till my senior year in high school. It's pretty commonplace now for a freshman in high school, if he's an elite guy, standout, like a freshman that would start on varsity, you know, as a ninth grader. Those guys are signing letters of intent now in ninth grade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole complexity of the college game has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's crazy. I remember I played college ball. I didn't get further than that, but sending, you know, video VHSs, and I was in high school late 90s or early 2000s. And, you know, and even,
well,
even
about, from, well, you were sending things. I wasn't sending anything. Just like, come and watch me and offer me a scholarship.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just,
the landscape has completely changed with technology and the data we have. It's actually a really cool thing. Cause I was, you know, as a player, I was a big information guy. Give me as much information as I get on my opponent.
Absolutely. So,
I'm kind of a, you know, my time was done 10, 12 years ago, but I'm kind of envious of the guys now that they can just flip on their iPad and just have the entire, whoever you're playing for that series, just have everybody right there on video. It's a pretty cool thing.
It is cool, and I'm a little envious too. But and we're going to touch on that in just a little bit. I'm going to ask you a question about, and we'll get to this in a bit, but your favorite pitcher and least favorite pitcher to face and what went into, you know, studying those guys. And like you just said, now you can go into the, after you're at bat, before the half inning's over, you go and watch, you know, watch clips of the guy you're facing or the guy you think's going to come out of the bullpen and face you next AB. But I'll ask you that in a little bit. But two of the cool stats that I found on you, this is one that maybe not many people know, but first of all, you were in the 2001 Home Run Derby as a Mariner at, I think it was it Safeco then or was it still the Kingdom?
Safeco.
Oh, Safeco. How cool was that to not only participate, because I think you hit in a couple, but in front of your home fans and everything like that.
You know, it's weird because I get asked all the time, you know, highs of your career. What were some of the big moments? And it's always the same thing. It's, you know, the first Gold Glove I won, my first day in the big leagues, my first World Series, my first All-Star game. These were all big points for me. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you that Home Run Derby and the crowd, the level of noise of that crowd being a hometown guy that particular year, and on a team that we saw had such a special year that year, winning 116 games. That city was just bananas that year. It was one of the greatest, you know, it was the greatest year, you know, I've ever had personally or from a team standpoint. Mm-hmm. And just, it was just fit to be that the All-Star game that year happened to be at our place. And
yeah.
That was my first Home Run Derby. And I just remember, you know, I think I hit two or three homers. And the format was completely different.
Correct. It's completely different now. Yeah.
Completely. I think it's gotten better. It's actually entertaining.
Yeah, because you have
that was back in the very beginning.
Yeah. And now you have the clock element and everything. You've got the timeout where you can come get, you know.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot of pressure now on the BP thrower.
Yes.
You better be good because you're on the clock.
Yeah. Especially.
It was completely different. But Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, especially like if you're Bryce Harper, who got to, he was kind of in the same boat hitting it, obviously in Nationals Park when he was with the Nats, but his dad was a BP pitcher. I can't imagine the pressure on his dad there.
Yeah, I mean, you find a good BP pitcher, they're tough to come by. But, you know, I went into that thing and I just thought, have a good time. I'm not a big BP home run guy, but I was honored to get to, you know, I was just happy that I got asked to do it. And I remember just going, just don't embarrass yourself, hit a few home runs for the crowd and just get out of there. Okay. And I ended up being tied with Sammy Sosa.
Wow.
And back in those days, to move on, you know, you had to win. Who Sosa was the guy I was playing against. Mm-hmm. And whoever won that round went on to the next. Well, me and Sammy tied. So instead of having a tiebreaker, what they did back then is they go to the stats. So who had the most home runs at the break? And I think that year I had 22 or 23 or something like that. And Sammy had 27.
Oh, that's
I didn't get to move on. And I remember the crowd was pissed. And,
I was going to say, did they just boo the heck out of the place?
Yeah, I mean, I got to play in a lot of cool places and on a lot of great teams. You know, I got to go to a World Series. So, you know, I had heard these crowds before, but that particular day, the standing ovation I got, I remember, really affected me. Like, wow,
that's
this
awesome.
Is really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
That was definitely a cool point in my career.
That's great.
Even though the home run derbies are completely irrelevant in your career, it was a fun time.
I have to ask you, after your derby, did you have that, and you said you just tried to give something to the crowd and then walk away. You didn't stick around three or four rounds. But did you have that aftermath, like the kind of like the Madden curse, they say? Did you have the home run derby curse where you were just kind of popping everything up the next few days after the break?
That particular, my first derby, no, I didn't have that at all.
That's
I don't
good.
Remember that at all. I think 03, I had a down second half after the home run derby. But I don't know if you chalk it up to that or just you know, you're on such a great pace in the first half, you can't
help
but go
up.
Down. And both of my home run derby years, I was having really my best first halves I've ever had.
And and you mentioned 2003, and that's funny because that was one of my next points, was that's the year you finished in the top 10 in the MVP voting for the American League. And guys on that list, it's just outrageous who was in front of you, who was behind you as far as the, you know, the MVP race, and guys like A-Rod. Did A-Rod win it that year? I think he might have.
03, I don't remember.
Yeah.
01, I think only Ichiro. I finished third in 01.
Oh, my gosh.
Giambi and Ichiro, I think finished ahead of me. But, that's for another time. Check the numbers on that one.
Okay.
Find out who should have been the MVP that year.
Okay.
I was robbed.
You were robbed. And the one I wanted, and I didn't want to bring that up because I know you were robbed. And so I went to the 03 round.
Well,
just because
I'll tell you. I played this game and what a, you know, how fortunate I was to just make it a career and all the accolades my family's accomplished.
That's great.
And you know, it's just, you get to a point as a player where you can do what you can do on the field. Mm-hmm. And I've been snubbed for a lot of awards. You know, I've been snubbed for some gold gloves, some all-star appearances. And you just kind of roll with the punches because you realize that, you know what, you're not the only one. Mm-hmm. Other guys, you're not the only one that's been, you know, didn't get something you deserved.
Correct.
So you're not alone in that. And maybe some years you win an award that, you know, maybe it could have gone to somebody else. So I didn't put much credence into it. I didn't comment on it at the time. It is what it is. And it's something I can go out and do what I do on the field. And once the voting starts, it's completely out of my hands. So.
Yeah. That's great. And there's a lot of guys, even guys I've talked to, you know, I'm friends with a few major league players who are either still in the game or out, who don't have that approach, who kind of, and I won't name names, but kind of hold on to that bitterness a little bit too long, in my opinion. So it's kind of refreshing, you know, to hear the opposite, where it's like,
yeah,
you know,
what's it going to do? You know,
exactly.
Right. What do you? I could come on here and say I should have won 7 gold gloves. Okay, I should have an MVP trophy.
Yeah.
Okay, I should. I should have four All-Star games, not 3.
Yeah.
But that doesn't do anybody any good. Who knows? Maybe later in my career, maybe in 03 or 04. Maybe I think 04. I'm thinking, man, that it wasn't one of my better defensive years.
Mm-hmm.
But I won the gold glove.
Absolutely.
You know, but I look back, my best years were 95, 96, 97. And I'm kind of going, man, what does it take to win a gold glove? So you kind of, you got to kind of break the glass, you know, back then, especially.
Absolutely.
I think now they take it a little more serious and they really grind on the vote.
Yeah.
But back then, I remember Rafael Palmeiro, I think in the late 90s, played 15 games at first base and DH'd the rest of the year.
Yeah, and won a gold glove.
And that's kind of. And that's kind of when they got egg on their face. So I think ever since then, they've taken the vote a little more seriously.
Yeah, and we have a guy, and you, everybody listening knows exactly who we're talking about here, in the American League West, who could win the AL MVP award for the next 20 years as long as he stays healthy. Mike Trout obviously will win as many awards as he wants. But I was talking about that list, the MVP voting in 03, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, Carlos Delgado, Alex Rodriguez, and you were among those names and even ahead of some of those. So I know you said you don't lose sleep over some of that, but how cool is it to be even mentioned in those names like those guys?
Well, I think it's great. You know, for me, it's the great ones in my mind that separate themselves and who I would vote for a Hall of Fame. These are the guys that did it for 10 years. You know, I had some elite years for 3 or 4 years. Whereas those guys you're talking about, it did it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's the difference. There were some great players back then.
Absolutely.
And there is now. There's always going to be great players. You know, the generations change, but there's always the guys that rise above and that's why you can't compare generation to generation. It's not fair to compare the guys of today with, say, the guys of my dad's generation.
Correct.
It's just the physicality is so much more now.
Absolutely.
But that's why the players in the 70s, the great players, are great players and iconic players because they were the best of their time.
Exactly.
You know, going all the way back to Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth in his day was hitting more home runs than other teams combined.
Yeah, there you go.
That makes him great.
Correct.
And one of the all-time iconic baseball players. But that's how you got to judge it. It's you can't judge generation. You can't compare LeBron James to the point guards of 1947.
It just doesn't
add up.
I couldn't agree more. And we've actually had an episode on that very thing where some of these comparisons are just all out of whack. And it's like, why are we wasting our time comparing?
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah,
it's
like
right.
You know, it's like Magic Johnson. You can't compare him to Steph Curry. I mean, they're playing against different play, and we could talk about that forever and ever. And I like that point because we've made that on this show before, and it's the same across the board.
It's human development. It's human development. We're getting bigger, stronger, faster. Techniques, technology.
Yep.
People actually on the planet. I mean, baseball in the 50s was white America.
Correct.
Baseball in 2019, we're drawing from
everywhere.
Tons of other countries. Mm-hmm. So we're getting the best of the best. I think that's nothing but great for sports.
Yeah.
I think, you know, on the big stage, you know, when you're watching those Major League Baseball teams, you don't want to just see the best players from America. You want to see the best players in the world.
Correct.
And that's going to raise the level of the competition. So I think it's nothing but good. 50 years from now, you know, we'll be gone, but the players then are going to be unbelievable.
I agree.
And kids 50 years from now are, you know, you're going to say, you should have seen Ken Griffey Jr. Oh, he was no good. You know, that's just life.
Yeah.
And that's what makes baseball great, because grandpa can talk to dad, who can talk to son, and they can all draw from their, you know, their time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And we're gonna finish up here in a few minutes. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to finish up here with Brett Boone. Planning for your big game party? The new way to buffet is the Infladium, the inflatable snack stadium. Perfect for your tabletop or tailgate. Fill it with snacks and enjoy the game. Easy to set up, easy to clean, and it's reusable. Get the Infladium entire suite of football party products at all Party City locations and online. That's Infladium, Infladium, Infladium. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, with Brett Boone as we finish up this this phone call. We're going to get right back into – I mentioned one of the two coolest stats that I found. One was that, you know, the MVP voting we just talked about. Another is one that hardly anybody will know. And can you tell everybody what your – in, I can't remember what year it was, but you and Aaron were playing together, and there was another set of brothers, and it had to have been the Reds because of Barry Larkin. How cool is that to be the very first and only, I believe, on the same infield as another set of brothers?
Well, I think at the time for us, it was the end of a long year. Yeah. And we just wanted to get it over with.
Fair enough.
Aaron, that was the first year Aaron and I played together mm-hmm. for a full season. He was my third baseman, and Barry I played with. He was my shortstop for 5 years. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Us playing together because we played together every night.
Exactly.
But they brought up Steven at the end, and it was just kind of a cool moment,
Yeah.
Never happened before. Who knows if it'll ever happen again. But those are little things that I remember. I think more than anything is when Aaron got to the big leagues and we were playing together, we really didn't look at it as a big deal. I mean, it's cool. We could have dinner together once in a while, but once the game started, Aaron wasn't my brother anymore. He's my third baseman, and he better get the ball to me on time. So it was a very professional. It's a very professional relationship, but I think like anything, when you're young and you're in the middle of your career, you're just going out there grinding on who's pitching that night, mm-hmm. and you don't get sentimental and say, look over and go, how cool is it that I'm playing with my brother? That never went through my mind.
Yeah.
When it's all said and done and you're done playing, you look back on times like that and go, that was really cool time.
Absolutely.
And you appreciate it a little more after the fact.
Yeah. That's a good point. And just sharing that middle infield, though, with Barry Larkin, one of the greatest to ever play, I think that would be something you look back on. And maybe not even know then, like, oh, my gosh, we're a beast middle infield. But looking back and saying, I got to spend, I think, 4 or 5 years with Barry as your shortstop.
Lark was, he was – when I got there, that was my – I was just coming from Seattle, and mm-hmm. Barry was real – he was already an all-star at that point and already really established. And I was just kind of coming into my own. So, we got to play together for 5 years.
That's amazing.
And, we had a real good relationship and a really good partnership up the middle. So that was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, Barry, he was a great, great player.
And I hear he's a good dude. I knew, I know Sean Casey and Eddie Tavency, who played with him a little bit. And I've heard he's a good clubhouse guy as well.
Yeah, Barry's a good. He's a good guy.
That's great.
I lived down in Florida for 6 or 7 years, and he lived right across the lake from me. So,
okay.
We trained together in the off season, and Barry's a good guy.
Nice. And you mentioned earlier about hitting in Seattle, and this was my next question. Your favorite stadium and city, that you got to, not necessarily your home park, but it can be your home park that you got to play in, and then, after the game, if you went. Out to eat or have a beer or whatever. What was your favorite kind of city to be a part of when you were on a road trip?
I loved hitting in Safeco. Back then, the wind patterns were a little bit different, and not too many people liked hitting in Safeco, but I did.
Uh-huh.
My favorite park. I love Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
I love playing day games at Wrigley. I liked Oakland, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Texas was always a great, great town to go to. But my number one, by far, favorite place is when we were going to Anaheim.
Oh, wow.
For some reason, I just, that was kind of where I grew up and went to high school. And I don't know what it was, but I'd come back to Angel Stadium and just my favorite place to play.
That's awesome. And then you don't have to answer this. I would guess if I was to guess, your least favorite stadium would probably be Olympic Stadium. That thing is not the nicest stadium.
That wasn't one of my favorite places. Plus, I had to go through customs.
Yeah,
I didn't like that.
Great city, though.
No, I didn't have much. I didn't have much success in Baltimore.
Okay.
I loved going to New York, mm-hmm. playing in Yankee Stadium. Loved it. Didn't like Shea. So I definitely had my places, my favorites, mm-hmm. and I loved playing in Minneapolis in the old dome.
Yeah.
I never got a chance to play in the new one. Didn't play in Arizona that much. Didn't like the Astrodome that much, but I got to play a couple series in this new Houston place.
Yep.
Wow, what a great place.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. We were at...
Some of these new stadiums, all the new stadiums, they're all state-of-the-art in there.
Correct.
But I go to Yankee Stadium, and I'll go visit my brother, and it's just different. It's not like the old one.
No.
The old one, there's something about it. It's like there's ghosts in there or something.
I have
but the
to...
new one's nice. It's just... It's not what I remember.
Correct. And when people ask me, because I'm almost done with the stadium tour, my wife and I just got back from L.A. and San Diego, so I've got a few more left. But Petco, by the way, is perfect. I love that place. But people say
Petco's beautiful.
It's insane. I mean, it's like a city in a ballpark. But people say, what's your favorite baseball memory? And over playing, and I threw a no-hitter in college. I wouldn't even say that was the best. But going to Yankee Stadium with some of my college teammates, you know, other than my wedding night, was my favorite night of my whole life. There's just something about old Yankee Stadium, even as a fan.
It's a special place.
Yeah, I mean, you just feel everybody that
and it was a dump. I'd walk in, and, you know, there's leaky pipes all over the place and a small clubhouse, kind of like a dungeon.
Yeah.
But when you walk out on that field, I can't explain it to people. It's kind of like, you're somewhere special.
Yeah.
And, it was an awesome place.
Completely agree. And, we're finishing up here. We wanted to go into, you know, the business side of baseball. That could take a whole other episode. We'd love to have you back on at some point in the future, but, you know, with guys like, Gabe Kapler today, who got fired, from the Phillies, just the managerial changes and contract discussions and, you know, all that stuff, just the whole business of baseball. People forget that baseball is a business, and the athletes, the players are employees. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about winning World Series championships, but a lot of these owners will say it's about the bottom line. And so, you know, give us a couple minutes worth and we'll let you go about how baseball is a business and one thing you were part of, whether that was getting drafted or you know, contract discussions where you're like, oh my gosh, this really is a business, where it kind of, you know, puts it all in perspective that, hey, this may not last forever. It is a business, and I'm going to put my time in until I just can't anymore.
Right. And, you know, it is as long as you're doing well and they'll pay you and they'll give you another contract.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I'm not performing up to my expectations, their expectations, I could be fired at any time.
Yeah.
So I always looked at it that way, you know, this is my living. This is how I support my family.
Correct.
So the economic side definitely pushes a player.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's different than it used to be back in the old days. In the even 40 years ago, 50 years ago, there were a lot more George Steinbrenners who, bottom line is, at all costs, we're going to win.
Yeah.
You know, I got to play for Marge Schott in Cincinnati, who was character in her own right. I mean, she used to make me, you know, I'd need a new dozen bats, and she'd make me turn in crack bats just to get new ones.
Oh, my gosh.
But at the trading deadline, she'd go out and get that big player that her general manager, because Marge, at the end of the day, all she wanted to do was win it. And that was the most important thing. Nowadays, there's a lot of corporations. It's not really family-owned teams like it used to be.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is based on bottom line. Mm. And as a player, we don't like that because we want to win, and that's all we care about.
Correct.
But it is what it is. And you have a certain amount of control. You got you and 24 guys down there in the clubhouse, and you make that engine run.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I love that, and I wish we could spend more time. We won't keep you too much longer where we really get, you know, dive deep into that, but we definitely appreciate your time, man, and, you know, tell your brother we're rooting for him, and my wife is, you know, diehard Yankees now, and so we're gonna be in front of the TV watching those, and hopefully next two series with them. But are you going to get to go out there and go watch a couple games and
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm kind of staying away right now. But if that happens, we'll probably go see him if he gets the World Series.
Nice, man. Well, tell him good luck from us and everybody. That was Brett Boone, stud second baseman, mostly with the Mariners and Reds. But thank you again for being on, and we'd love to have you back at some point down the road.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Planning for your big game party? The new way to buffet is the Infladium, the inflatable snack stadium. Perfect for your tabletop or tailgate. Fill it with snacks and enjoy the game. Easy to set up, easy to clean, and it's reusable. Get the Infladium entire suite of football party products at all Party City locations and online. That's Infladium, Infladium, Infladium. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, from a great phone call with Brett Boone. Again, we'd like to thank Brett for taking some time. He's out in Seattle, and he was probably watching some playoff baseball while while we decided to talk to him. So thank you again, Brett. It was fun talking to you. So we are going to change sports mid-episode here. We've got NBA season right around the corner, as well as college basketball. So we may touch on college, but we're going to really dive into the NBA because we are in northern Colorado, just north of Denver, and the Denver Nuggets fever is all around us. We've got there's been a lot of experts. I'm here with Dante Roberts, who was on here a few episodes ago, our NBA insider. We are with Dante Roberts, who's on here a couple episodes ago. And I'm sorry, I just made everybody laugh because I made an inappropriate joke. But we are going to dive in with him. He is our Woj. And we're going to talk a little NBA. We're going to predict some stuff. We're going to kind of analyze some stuff. We're going to talk the draft. We're going to talk a little bit of everything, even some head coaching that we think is a good fit and a bad fit, and maybe even a prediction for Coach of the Year. So, Dante, thanks for coming back, man. We're glad to have you back. It's been a couple months, but now that we are in basketball season, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited to talk some hoops and to be back. That's great.
Back in the glorious NL Studios.
Oh, man.
In the Price home.
Yes. I'm very excited. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're in the Denver area. There's Nuggets fever going around. Yourself is a Nuggets fan.
Yep.
Give us a little bit of a kind of an off season, and then we're obviously in preseason now, but an off season and preseason grade from the draft, to all the moves they made with Jerami Grant, the trade, and that may be something you touch on. So, give us an overall, bias aside, I know it's hard. What is your grade of the Denver Nuggets this off season?
I'm gonna say definitely an A.
I like it.
I think they, the draft, they nailed it. They got Bol Bol in the second round. Took a chance on him. I think it was 45th or 46th. I can't remember, but they didn't have a first round pick, and so they took a chance on Bol Bol, who was supposed to be a top, 14. He was supposed to be in the lottery. So it was nice that they traded up in the second round and got him. And then the Jerami Grant trade. I think if anybody watched the preseason game two nights ago.
He looked good, and he fit that system.
So good.
Oh, my gosh.
He was knocking down threes. He was blocking shots. He's just the perfect fit. And really, Paul Millsap looked very good, too, the other night. But, I think there's a chance where Jerami Grant might start mid-season. He's so good.
So I had that conversation today, and there was a debate on whether that's some people think that's bad, that, hey, Jerami Grant's going to come in here via trade. That means Paul Millsap's game is slipping a bit because of his age. But I look at it as, why is that a problem where you have two guys like that, potential all-stars, battling for a spot? And even if – and I think Jerami Grant's athletic enough that you say, hey, you're not going to play here. You're going to play here.
Yeah.
Where you have maybe Millsap at four, him at three, whatever the case is, where you have them both on the court at the same time. So it's like, that's a good problem. Like NBA coaches, like Mike Malone is probably, thanking God every day that he's got guys like that that he can slide in and fit in. And so that was interesting you brought that up, because we had that talk today at work that I think he could start.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be games he will start.
Yeah, he will start. And I think depending on the matchups, he'll probably start a game. One of the cool things that I saw in the preseason game is that they played him at the five.
Yeah.
And they played him at the five, and they went a little small ball. Mm-hmm. He can play the four, and he can play the three.
When you play, small ball like that, you have to play an up-tempo pace. Mm-hmm. You can't slow the game down where, you back into the paint and try to draw a foul. That's not how that game is modeled after. Are you afraid if they do use him as the five that, in my opinion, they're fast and athletic enough to run with anybody. But are you ever afraid that Malone may try that against a team that wants to slow the game down? Or do you think he's good enough coach to say, hey, this is what they're going to do. We're not going to try that this game, even though we're, 12-6 with, 4 of our 12 wins against big teams that we've tried that. Like, How do you think he'll adjust if that's the way they go?
Yeah, I think he'll definitely put it out there. I think the really good thing about Jeremy Grant is that he can play defense.
Mm-hmm.
He can be an athletic five, and he can stretch the floor and hit mm-hmm. three. So I
yeah.
think it puts teams at a real disadvantage that are trying to defend us. Now, if we're playing somebody, I'm thinking like the 76ers, who have Al
the
Horford
bigs, yeah.
and Embiid. You know, it might be a challenge, and you might not – you probably can't go small ball like you want to, but it could be something that they try at
Correct.
Least. But
because then when you do that, like you said, now the bigs are having to defend a perimeter player
mm-hmm.
who can also drive, get to the bucket, and we saw what he did when he threw down a couple dunks the other night.
Yeah.
And again – we're recording this on Thursday night, the 10th of October. So, you know, we've got the Astros Rays game 5. So we're by the time you hear this, it may be a few days after. So we're just really, you know, going off that one preseason game the Nuggets have so mm-hmm. far. But everything that I saw in that game, they played a good Trailblazer team who played some big
yeah.
names, and you know, so it wasn't like they played. You know, Real Madrid or whatever,
yeah,
where,
exactly.
where they should win and look good. They
yeah.
played against other NBA talent, and they looked like every bit as good as the hype. And we're not going to stick on the Nuggets the whole time. You know, we have a people listening from all over the place, mm-hmm. so we'll try to adjust. And you mentioned the draft with, and we did talk about this last time, where the Nuggets didn't have a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. But with a healthy, and we're going to talk about this guy in a minute, a healthy Michael Porter Jr.
Yes.
Coming back. He missed all of last year, what would have been his rookie year.
Yeah.
So him coming back is like having a first-round pick.
Yeah.
So they got Porter, and they got Bol Bol.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Tell me a team or two that you may say, other than these two teams that you're going to mention, the Nuggets might have had the draft of the league with that guy coming back, and, of course, Bol Bol.
Yeah.
Who had the best draft, in your opinion?
Gosh, man.
We know who Nate's going to say. Luckily, he doesn't have a mic. He can't. You don't have to hear him. He's the Warrior
he's
fan.
Well, you know, Nuggets had a very good draft. Like, when you think of
Correct.
When you put Michael Porter Jr. in this draft, when you technically make him our first round pick for this year, I mean, to get two top lottery guys in one draft is great. I think the Pelicans winning the lottery. Yeah, I mean, you get Zion. That is an incredible thing for them, especially after the season they just had with mm-hmm. Anthony Davis. And for them to win the lottery and get this once-in-a-generational player in Zion, I think is going to definitely help them a lot. And he just had 29 points last night.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody could stop him.
Yeah, and he's going to be very good. He's definitely going to have to work on his outside game. I think once teams start, you know, I don't know if they can really defend him, but once teams start maybe packing it in on him, making it a little bit difficult for him to drive and maybe make those cuts, his game is going to need to expand
Correct.
Outside into that three. But if he gets that, who's going to stop him?
Correct.
And it's going to be scary.
Yeah.
So that's one thing.
I think too, he's got a little bit of advantage, and I don't mean to cut you off there, but I think – with, of course, he went to Duke, you know, the school of the one and dones is what they're really known
yeah.
for. That there's nobody better to learn the NBA game under in college
mm-hmm.
as much as Coach K can
exactly.
teach you. Because and you know, people may wonder what that means. Of course, he coaches the USA basketball team, which is obviously all NBA guys or has been traditionally. And then Duke, because they're one and done, that's how they play. It's NBA guys going to school.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't think there's any one coach out there at the college level that can prepare a guy like Zion
mm-hmm.
to be successful. And that's what Coach K is about, and I respect him. It's, hey, how can I better your career
yep.
as a player? And he does that so well with everybody that goes through there. So, like you said, I think that there's he'll have to tune up a few pieces of his game. But I think that he has the head smart to, you know, to do that and be very successful.
Yeah, and he's in the perfect situation.
Correct.
I mean, Pelicans are going to run. They, you know, they made the trade. They got Lonzo, who's a pass first, you know, point guard. He's
yep.
going to make those passes to him. And they got a young team where he
very
can
young.
Grow. So they're in a great position.
Yeah.
They had a great draft. I mean, John Morant, who went second to the Grizzlies. He's going to be a great player, I personally think. And he's in another great situation.
He's the scorer of the draft.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's the most offensive. Other than a power guy like Zion, I think he's the most talented guy with the basketball we've seen in the draft in a while.
Yeah, and he's going to have the opportunities to score.
Correct.
You know, with the Grizzlies. And, you know, that's a lot of times when rookies are successful, you know, has to do with the organization, the coach, and the opportunity. And I think, you know, a lot of these guys that got drafted in the top have a great opportunity to grow and get better. So it's going to be really exciting. And I think a guy that you're excited about is Darius Garland, too.
Vandy boy.
Yes. And, you know, he's going to be good, too. He's one of my favorites coming out of the draft.
Me too.
And, oh, man.
When he said, I'm going to Vandy, I was so excited because we knew, all Vandy fans knew, he's probably a one-and-done guy like Duke, like Coach K gets. But we didn't expect him to play five games and be hurt. So this guy plays five college games as a freshman and then is, fourth or fifth overall pick. And that's how good that kid is.
Yeah.
And as long as he stays healthy, and that Cleveland Cavaliers team in a few years is going to be lights out good.
Yeah.
It's scary how good they could be just in a few years. So I think that was a team that I penciled in as that was a good draft because they had – people were kind of scratching their heads like, why did they take another point guard? They drafted, what's his name from Alabama?
Oh, Colin Sexton.
Yeah, Sexton the year before. So now you have two young point guards. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, well, both of them are athletic enough, you know, to put them on the court to run, run up and down the court. And now that the NBA game has changed so much to that style of basketball, you'll see that more.
Yes.
You know, as the years go on, you'll see that where, you know, okay, so what? We have two point guards. They can both hit threes.
Exactly.
Like Darius Garland is a 45 whatever percent three-point shooter.
Yeah.
He's a small two, but he can play the two and damn well, you know, be an all-star in the next year or two.
Yeah, there's no positions anymore. I mean, I think the biggest thing, too, is like big men are starting to make the return. You think of Jokic and Karl Anthony Towns and Embiid and things like that, but they're all unique. And, you know, you bring up the two-point guard thing. Like, when you think of Portland, too, like, basically, I know McCollum's not technically, like, a point guard, but you got Lillard and McCollum. You know,
correct,
they're two smaller guards.
It's already a model that shows you this could be done.
Yeah.
And it could be done well because that team is dangerous every time they step on the court.
If you got guys that can score and can play well and can play fast, I mean, it doesn't matter. If you're talented, you're going to be on the court. And if you got two good guys, doesn't matter what position they are anymore.
And you're right. I mean, you got LeBron dribbling the ball up and down the court. Yeah. Like, he's a point guard. Everybody knows he's not.
Yeah.
He just needs the ball every possession. So why not let him bring it up and down
the
court? So, you know, I think, and we're going to make some predictions here in a minute, you know, on what we think as far as, you know, Western Conference and Eastern Conference playoff picks. But, you know, I think the teams that you just mentioned, and I'm not sure if you'll have them on your top eight in each conference or not, but the Pelicans and the Cavaliers, I'm going to make a way early prediction and say they will meet in an NBA Finals in the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, maybe.
I really do.
The NBA, a lot of these teams that were, I mean, you think of Golden State. Sorry, Nate, I don't mean to say this right now.
Oh, Nate, he's going to cut us off.
He's cutting the show. But a lot of these teams that have dominated the last 10 years, their rosters have changed a lot.
Yeah.
The players are getting older. Not saying they're going to be totally gone or not relevant, but, you know, the NBA is going to change a lot in the next couple of years.
I agree, and I think that we are seeing kind of more parity in the league, which is, I think, a balanced league is a better league.
Yes.
It is also good because when the Warriors were a super team, and until they don't make it back, I still consider them a favorite. Like, you can't just say
– it's like the Patriots in a lot of ways.
Correct.
You know?
It is. But they're younger now. They got, you know, D'Angelo Russell. Now they don't have Durant anymore. Yeah, Klay Thompson's hurt for the year. I don't think they're going to be a team in my top eight. Just we're going to ruin that a little bit before. But anytime you have Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell on the court at the same time, scary team.
It's a scary team, and you'll get Clay back. And if they want to trade Russell, they can.
Correct, like, and they can get a haul for him.
Yeah, like if we're at the trade deadline and they find somebody else that can fit, they'll do it. So
correct, yeah.
They have flexibility.
So before we go into our top eight, tell me one rookie Let me just ask you this. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Who is the rookie of the year in the 2019-2020 NBA season?
Oh, man. It's hard to not go Zion because I think there's a little bit of bias with him, and that's what you got to consider with rookie of the year. Is there's been times where, you know, players have won. Like, I think of the LeBron-Carmelo year. I always think this. And obviously, Carmelo was with Denver. Mm-hmm. Carmelo had a better year than LeBron and didn't win Rookie of the Year. And he took the Nuggets to the playoffs that year. But because LeBron was, you know, the number one pick, he was the chosen one. He kind of got a little bit more votes just because of that, and I think that's what's going to happen this year.
Okay.
There could be players that are better than him, but I think he's going to be on the highlight reel all the time. He's going to have dunks that are incredible. He's going to have an outstanding game that's going to be on national TV. So I think there's a little bit of bias. I think Zion's going to win it, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody, you know, like a Darius Garland,
yeah,
or even Cody White, or Kobe Wright for the Bulls. Yeah. You know, he's going to get a lot of opportunities. So I think there's a couple guys in there that can have a really good year. And Michael Porter Jr. is eligible.
Yes, he is. He's a rookie. I was going to say, if he gets enough minutes, and stays healthy, that's a dangerous dude.
That's a dangerous one.
I'm going to be a little bit biased because I am a Knicks fan.
R.J. Barrett. We didn't even discuss R.J.
We don't even have time to discuss.
And he's
going to
have an opportunity.
Class. So it's going to be like Zion, where people are going to go to the Garden, because we know the Knicks aren't going to go anywhere this year.
Yeah.
They're a couple years away from being competitive. Mm-hmm. I think they'll win a few more games this year than last. You know, and maybe Charles Oakley won't get kicked out of the arena again this year. But R.J. Barrett will play, you know, 40 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Knicks fans, that place will get packed, but they go to watch specific players. And having a young R.J. Barrett who loves New York City, wants to play there, that will keep butts in the seats. And I think that the more minutes those guys play, like a Zion, the more exposure they get on the court, because they're getting enough off the court already.
Yeah.
You know, I think that R.J. Barrett, he's my pick to win it.
Yeah, that's a very good pick. I don't know why, you know, kind of we skipped over him.
No, I don't think we have time to talk about it.
But seriously, he's going to have the opportunity. He's in New York, the biggest media market, and there's going to be a lot of times where you get to watch him play.
Yeah.
And if he has a solid year, he's going to be right there.
Yeah. I like that we both pick something different, because it's because there's, like you said, there's four or five other guys like Darius Garland or somebody that could legit win it, and that's really good for the NBA. So, coach of the year. Before we get to our picks again, we're going to go coach of the year, which if we tell you the coach of the year in our opinion, you're probably going to know that we are more than likely going to have that team in the top eight or they won't be eligible for a coach of the year, really. So who's your coach of the year pick? And there can be bias if you really believe that, who's who it would be.
I know. I mean.
Because I know who you want to say.
Gosh, I really think Mike Malone. I think it's set up for him to win because the Nuggets are kind of in this weird spot where people think they're going to be very good. But also I think people will be shocked if they got a top three.
Yeah.
It's just kind of this weird dynamic where people are like, they're really good, but can they survive in this West? I'm going to pick a wild one here.
Okay.
This is going to be really weird. And I think just because the off season they have, I'm going to say, this is crazy. I'm going to say Mike D'Antoni.
I like it.
And this is the reason.
I don't think that's crazy, because that's mine.
Is it really?
Yes.
Well, good. We agree on something.
Don't be like, I'm a flat-out idiot, because then you're offending me because I had that same fit.
The reason why is, you know, I think the Rockets are in a little bit of a downfall.
Of course.
But I think people are kind of underrating them a little bit, and I think Russell's going to have a bounce back year. I think the system fits him perfectly, and he was really bad last year. Like, when you start breaking down everything he's done and his shooting, his three-point shooting, it's bad. And just when you're watching the game, the plays that Russell Westbrook made down the stretch, it was just bad. Like, he just wasn't that good. And I know his stats kind of say otherwise when you kind of just look at him, but he wasn't very good.
No.
I think he's going to have a better season.
I agree.
This year.
Yeah.
And I think the Rockets are going to be kind of right there.
Yeah.
I think they're in a unique position.
So – I like that you said that because, first of all, we agree on D'Antoni. He's I think it's not that crazy because if you have two guys like and you can balance it and you can win games, which they will, and you can keep them from hating each other, you've done more as a head coach than you know any other head coach in the league can really do.
Yeah.
And I think he's the guy that can do that.
Yes.
So I think D'Antoni is a great pick. And here's the thing. Last night, I'm a big baseball fan. Everybody knows that. We talk baseball on here a lot. Yesterday, I was interested because this is true. They were talking about leaving. The Cardinals just destroyed the Braves in Game 5 yesterday. But who was it? It was Flaherty for the Cardinals. They sent him out there. He had thrown 92 pitches. They sent him back out there for the seventh inning, I think. And the point that was made on the air, listening to the game on the way home from work, was 92 pitches is 92 pitches in a close game where they're high demand pitches is a lot different than 92 pitches where you're up 13-1.
Yeah.
And I think the same way of Russell Westbrook, his triple doubles last year, he got triple doubles and they didn't mean anything because they weren't going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But now you're going to get triple doubles that mean something where the Rockets are going to be good. James Harden's going to benefit from those triple doubles. And you know what I mean?
Yes,
and so I thought that when I was driving, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like Russell Westbrook's game this year now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like his triple doubles in the past, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's a different type of triple double than the triple double he's going to have for a team that could finish in the top two or three in the regular season. So we both agree on D'Antoni and also that the Rockets are going to be right up there in the Western Conference. We are now ready. Are you ready to give your top eight in each conference and maybe an NBA Finals prediction?
I think I'm as ready.
Wait, first, MVP.
Oh, okay.
We got to go MVP. We skipped MVP.
Yes. Got to go MVP.
Let's ask Chu while we think about it. He doesn't have a mic, but we can certainly look to him for his pick. Is it Steph Curry or? Okay, I knew it. Steph Curry is. I mean, is that biased or is that like a legit pick?
He wanted to say Steve Curry.
What?
Now that Durant's not there,
make
the playoffs.
I respect that. He said, if you couldn't hear him. He said, "Now that Durant's gone, if they go to the playoffs, which they will, it's the Golden State Warriors, that he's going to win MVP. Not a bad guess at all. He's a very special player.
Not a bad guess.
I know it hurts you to admit that.
Yeah. Oh, MVP! Gosh, all this Golden State talk just threw me off. How about you go first? I'm still debating.
Okay. I'm going to go, and you may think this is absolute bonkers. I'm going to go with Anthony Davis. I think.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Okay. I want to hear
like
this.
I'm crazy.
I want to hear this.
Listen, I think Anthony Davis is the most talented player in the NBA. I don't like him. Mm-hmm. I don't like his unibrow. I don't like the University of Kentucky. I don't like John Calipari, so I really don't like Anthony Davis. But I think with LeBron doesn't have to take, you know, 50 shots a game. He can ease off that, and that's only going to benefit because somebody has to shoot. If he's shooting the ball less, somebody else is going to have to shoot. And, you know, I think Kyle Kuzma is going to benefit from it. I think Anthony Davis is going to benefit from it. He protects the paint or protects the rim. He plays physical. If he stays healthy, Anthony Davis is my pick, and I think that I won't ruin it. They're going to go far in the Western Conference playoffs.
Okay, I like the pick.
Nate doesn't. He almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, anything
it's
Lakers.
Just because it's because like, anything California that's not Bay Area.
Yeah. You know, I hope that doesn't happen, let's just say. So it's a good pick because I like the points you made up. It very well can happen, but I just don't want it to happen.
I don't either. Can I redo?
I think we are going to get a unique MVP vote this year. And I think it's going to go to one of the big men out there. Now, I don't have a specific pick, but I have two that I'm just going to say. I say it's going to go to the big man. It's going to be a battle between Embiid and Jokic, battling it out for MVP.
Ooh, I like it.
I think the NBA, I mean, for so long it's been a guard or and not even say guard, but, you know, just like a bigger LeBron, KD, you know.
James Harden,
Steph, Giannis. Like, they like the flash. I think it goes back old school this year. And we're going to see two teams that are going to do very well in the NBA. And they're led by both their big men, and Embiid and Jokic. And I think it's going to come down to the very end. And I will put a pick here. I know this isn't popular since we're here in Colorado, but I think Embiid could be MVP this year.
And I don't like him at all.
Yeah.
Again, I just don't. I'm obviously Sixers, not my team. And I think he's kind of a punk, but he is as talented as just about anybody. So I don't think that's a crazy pick.
Yeah.
I want to, if it's one of those two, I want Jokic by far.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
100%.
You know, I think those guys both make their teams better.
Yes.
They give you a chance to win every single night, and they're worth the price of admission to go watch them play.
Yep.
And that's what an MVP does.
Yes.
And I like those two picks. So, I like that. That's,
yeah.
Again,
it's a unique.
It is. And
it's a unique pick for sure. I'm big on the bias. There's always bias with NBA in terms of awards sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the bias will come in. I don't necessarily think Embiid will have a better season than Jokic or maybe not lead the Sixers further. But I think a lot of people like him a little bit more because of the flash he brings. And he talks a lot.
Yes,
and
he does.
He's in, you know, the Philadelphia market. So.
And they love that style.
They love it.
You know, because he does play the game hard.
He does.
And he loves that city, does good things for the city, and Philly fans, you know, eat that up. So,
yeah.
I don't think that's a bad pick
at
all.
A lot of people were upset last year when Jokic got first team All-NBA over Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
But the crazy thing is like, not only did Jokic have, a better season, but overall better as far as all the things he did. Embiid put up higher stats and stuff. But Embiid missed a lot of games last year.
Yes, he did.
To injuries.
And so. I honestly think that's why, you know, that they got Horford, because that gives them a little bit of an insurance policy if Embiid is hurt and does miss significant time.
Yep.
So I thought that was a big move they made to get Horford. And that team is well coached.
Yes, it is.
It's a scary team out east.
It is.
And now that we're talking about it, we'll Nate wanted us to, if we have time, and we'll pick real quick. We don't have to explain the pick. Defensive player of the year real quick before we get into our playoff teams.
I'm going to say Draymond Green.
I like that pick. I'm going to go Hassan Whiteside.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, yep. He is he'll lead the league in blocks. I think he'll be in the top 10 in rebounds. And so I think it's going to be Hassan Whiteside. Yeah, I really do. I think he's the shot blocking you know that he has. And that team's going to go pretty far too.
Yeah.
I think it's Whiteside. I'm going to go with that one.
Okay. I like that.
So who are your we're going to go Eastern Conference first.
Okay.
Your top eight, and they don't have to be in order. Just give us your eight playoff teams out east.
Okay. Eight playoff teams. Obviously, we got the top four. We won't have to do them in order, but 76ers, the Bucks, Celtics, Raptors. Those are the for sure four up there. They're probably going to get the top four. The next four are really interesting. I will definitely go, I think the Orlando Magic make it back again.
Of course.
The Pacers are going to be better than people think.
Yep.
They're going to be healthy this year. They're going to get their star back. The Nets, I think, obviously with Kyrie, I think they're a good team. So adding Kyrie, and if he can stay healthy, he's going to be up there. And then my last one. This is the hardest one. And to me, it comes down to the Heat, the Bulls, and the Pistons. And for no other reason, just because I am going to go. Oh, shoot. I'm going to go the Heat. I was going to go to the Bulls. But the only reason why I'm picking the Heat, I totally forgot about Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. I was not even thinking about that.
Yep.
So the Heat.
Okay. I like that. So
those are my top eight.
Okay. I'll give you mine real quick. Of course, the Bucks in the East, I think, are the cream of the crop. I don't think anybody's going to beat them. I think Boston's going to go. Sixers, of course. I'm going to say Toronto. I don't think they're going to be as good as people think, even though they are. They don't have Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they don't have DeRozan anymore either, so it's kind of Kyle Lowry's team.
Yeah.
Serge Ibaka, you know, of course, and they've got some – they've got some good players up there in Canada. I think the Detroit Pistons, Andre Drummond, is the most underrated player maybe this league's ever seen. Nobody talks about that guy, but he is an absolute monster. I really like the Pistons. I like your Pacers pick. I'm going to go with the Bulls. Over the Heat. I think Jimmy Butler will kind of implode as he did in Philly.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to work out. And the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, they took the Sixers the 7 games in the first round last year, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so to not have them in the playoffs would just be stupid. So
yeah.
That's my Eastern Conference.
Okay. I like it.
What are your Western Conference picks here, and then we'll get to the conference finals and then the NBA finals.
This is where it gets tricky.
And again, you don't have to do 1 through 8 unless you want to.
I think I'm just gonna say them and then maybe rank them later, but for sure the Rockets, for sure the Nuggets, for sure the Clippers, for sure the Jazz. Oh man, there's so many. Okay, I'm gonna say the Lakers,
mm-hmm.
the Warriors. I know the, and then two more. I'm gonna say Mavericks. Luka is gonna lead them with Porzingis, and then I'm gonna go. This last one's tough, but I'm gonna go the Portland Trail Blazers.
That's and I think you stuttered on that word because of your bitter hatred for
them.
I just
want to leave them out.
Yeah, and I gotta say I instead of the Bulls I the Magic, Vucevic, and those guys are good.
Yes.
That's Aaron Gordon, of course.
Gordon.
They're gonna be a good basketball
team.
And I think the Magic could be one of those sleeper teams in the East that makes a run.
Yeah, makes a run. This is the time to do it.
Correct. So I think the Magic in that Southeast division of the Eastern Conference. But my 8 out West: Golden State, LA Clippers, LA Lakers, Utah Jazz. Is that 4?
Yeah.
4 teams. I'm going to go Nuggets, of course. I am going to go Houston Rockets, Dallas Mavericks, and then this last team may surprise you. It's not San Antonio, who's been in the playoffs every year since I was born, I think.
Yeah.
I am going to go with the Sacramento Kings to be that 8th spot in the Western Conference.
Whoa!
Yeah, I am. I'm going to go Sacramento Kings, and if they don't do it this year, that's it. So everybody that can't, obviously nobody can see me and see it, but if you can imagine these two guys' face when I just said that, it was like it was like I committed an incredible murderous act.
And it's
they
not,
looked at me like I'm crazy, but I don't think I am.
You know, it's not that far fetched.
No.
I mean, if De'Aaron Fox
watch them win 7 games. So if here's the deal, if they miss the playoffs by 20 games or whatever, I'll never talk NBA again. I'll make that deal with you.
It'll just be me.
But this is why they've got Yogi Ferrell, mm-hmm. Indiana Hoosier. They've got De'Aaron Fox, and they're all young. And they, you know, so Buddy Hield.
Yes.
They've got Trevor Ariza, who's been there and been in the playoffs many times. Marvin Bagley, Harrison Barnes, Bogdanovich. That's De'Aaron Fox.
That's a good team.
That's a team I wouldn't want to play in a 7-game series.
I think with that point, and we touched on this in the podcast last time, was that there's so many good teams.
And I love it.
There's so many good teams.
I love it. And if everybody agreed on the 8 in each conference, this would be a boring season.
Yeah.
So there's some parity here, and I love it.
And there's always one or two teams, usually in each conference, that you either predict higher that totally falls or vice versa. You know, like you're just like, oh, they're not going to be that great. And then they're right there battling for a playoff spot. So, and this is the year that it's going to happen.
It will
be a lot of wild things that happen.
Yeah, it will be.
And there's also injuries and stuff that can happen that can change the whole landscape.
Correct. You're one broken leg away from one team being a for sure playoff team to one team that's crawling into the playoffs as the 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their season, they're not going to win that first round matchup.
Yes.
And so it's weird because that changes how you draft. That changes how, you know, it's crazy to think about. So you're absolutely right. I think you're an injury or something away from it being a completely different setup.
And
who are your Eastern Conference final? What is your Eastern Conference Finals matchup? And what is your Western Conference Finals matchup? And then we will get into the NBA Finals prediction.
Okay, so to me it will be Sixers, Bucks.
Okay.
With the Sixers.
Ooh.
Getting out of that conference.
Okay.
I personally think the Bucks might need to make a few trade deadline moves. I don't know exactly what they need, but I think they're a move away from being a finals team. Giannis is so good.
He's so good.
He's so good, and I think he can just dominate through the East now. He's the trouble. He's the guy you have to go through now to get to the finals. But I think they're a move away, and until they make that move, I don't think they're coming out of the East. So I think the Sixers are going to be in the finals, which is crazy. I think Al Horford adds something to their team that kind of elevates them to that position. And then in the West, I'm going to be a little bit of a homer here, and I don't know if it's much of a homer because to me the Nuggets are really good. And the Nuggets might be one move away, too. I think they can kind of condense their team down a little bit and make a bigger trade. I think a Bill or somebody like that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Nuggets, Clippers.
Ooh, that would be incredible.
Nuggets, Clippers, Western Conference Finals. And I'm going to say the Nuggets are getting out of the West. This is wild. I never thought I would say this in all my years.
You look like a once you so you know how sometimes you like you come clean with something like when you were a kid and you want to just confess like
yeah
mom I like brought a snake into the house or whatever the heck you did. Yes. And it's like it's so freeing to admit it.
Yeah,
and it looks like I'm floating.
I can it's say like the Nuggets are gonna go to the finals.
It's like you just paid off your house, your car, and everything. Like
yes,
you have no debt whatsoever. You're
no
free.
Debt.
You're
I'm dead. I'm screaming out.
So you have Sixers Nuggets NBA
Sixers
finals.
Nuggets wow. Wild random finals, but that's where the NBA is headed.
So
it's headed for a wild year.
I don't think it's that random just because of what we've been saying. Any there's really 8 or 10 teams in each conference that could legitimately make a run and go deep.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to go Clippers. I'm not going to go Lakers. I'm going to go in this I'll go Western Conference first. Mm-hmm. I like your Denver Nuggets pick. I think top to bottom, they're the deepest team in the league. Mm-hmm. I think there's not even a close second, I don't think.
Yeah.
If Porter stays healthy, and I know that there can be a lot of ifs and whatever, mm-hmm. but with a healthy Michael Porter Jr., that team's not going to lose.
Yeah.
No team can match up with them in the playoffs. So, excuse me, I think it's going to be I like the Houston Rockets still.
Yeah.
I really, truly do. I think they play the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. I think the Nuggets come out of that in
yes.
5 or 6. I think it's over relatively quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I, too, pick the Denver
like
Nuggets.
I
like it. Yeah, I do. And part of that is bias because we can go to the Pepsi Center and watch them whenever
yeah.
we want. And in the East, I'm going to go with Milwaukee Bucks, of course. Anybody
yes.
that has Giannis and
yes.
a rejuvenated Brooke Lopez, who looks like he's one of the best players in the game out of nowhere.
Threes down.
Yeah, just bizarre. Like Eric Bledsoe is incredibly talented with the ball and off the ball. I think he's a great player. I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks. Obviously going to the NBA Finals in the East, but I think they're going to beat – I think the Boston Celtics are going to make a run.
Make a run,
yeah,
okay.
I really do.
I think that.
I still
with
think –
Kemba.
Yeah, I still think Kemba. He'll show how really good he is.
Yeah.
And how I think they made the right call saying no to Kyrie, going to get Kemba. He's not as flashy and sexy of a player as maybe a Kyrie. And I think that that's going to do well for him in Boston. And you're going to see how good that kid really is.
Oh, yeah.
So Boston, Milwaukee in the East, Denver and Houston in the West. I got Denver over Milwaukee in the NBA.
Oh, my gosh.
And Denver Nuggets winning the NBA championship.
I don't think I would. I would never stop celebrating.
I don't.
It'd be a summer full of celebrate. I would drink every day.
Oh, my God. I don't see that being impossible. You may
be drinking every day or the finals.
Both. Oh, man. And who's your pick in the NBA Finals? You had Sixers, Nuggets.
I had Sixers, Nuggets. Oh, I didn't even pick. Well,
no, you didn't pick. I jumped the gun there and picked.
Okay.
I went ahead and picked.
Well, I'm going Nuggets as well.
I like it.
This is the year. This is the year.
So since we both agree, and I think Nate does too, that the Nuggets are going to win it all.
Yeah. He was shaking his head.
We should take this momentum and this positivity into Vegas. Put some money down the Nuggets winning it all, and let's cash the F out of it.
Yeah, let's cash. Have them win, cash out.
Now that Allegiant Airlines flies right out of here in Fort Collins, Colorado now.
I know.
We fly nonstop to freaking Vegas.
Fly there.
True story, Nate. He's acting like I'm lying here.
He's all looking at
flights. Yeah, he's looking it up now as he plays
golf. He's trying to go to Vegas right after this podcast.
He's playing golf cat. But ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. We had some fun today. It was a great show from top to bottom. Again, we had Brett Boone, one of my all-time favorite players, on the show earlier. One more shout out to him. One more shout out to our sponsor, Inflatium. Dante Roberts, thank you again, my friend. This was really fun. We're going to have you back. We're probably going to have you back quarter season, mid season, three quarter season. And then when we celebrate, drinking every day with the, when we're on 16th Street.
Can we have a drinking podcast where we have a few? Have you ever watched Drunk History?
Yes, that show's hilarious.
It's a great show. We should have a drunk podcast.
And have you seen Booze Traveler?
I haven't.
Oh, you should check out Booze Traveler.
Okay.
Incredible show. We're going to listen to our podcast back and say we need subtitles because we're speaking another language.
Just like, what's going on?
Oh, my gosh. Nate will have to babysit us, and he'll be the one talking.
Yeah, but he needs to be drinking as well.
He does. He's not fun until he drinks.
Yeah, and we got to take shots between breaks or something. I'm really excited about that show, and it hasn't happened.
Can we just stop this and then start over with that?
The drinking one and then make our predictions?
No, Nate, I'm just kidding. You're Nate's a fantastic dude, and I say this every episode, but a huge thanks to him producing. He doesn't have as fun of a job as us that we get to talk. He's just sitting there playing My Little Pony or something on his phone while we're Pokemon Go or something. He's spinning in circles
he's
like an idiot.
Trying to catch them all.
But thanks to Nate for doing this. We couldn't do it without
him.
Thank
you, Nate.
Yeah, we're extremely grateful for you. As our friend and our producer. So thanks, everybody. This has been a great episode. We will catch you next time with another special guest out of the box a little bit. We're thinking outside the bun for this next guest, and you're going to want to hear it. So thanks, everybody. Have a good night.